I actually have several things I want to talk about today that I'll try and fit into about 30 minutes. And I titled it Choosing Our Own Future because I think the challenge of a keynote is to try and figure out how to make it meaningful. And it's easy for these things to be, in some way, sometimes they can become sort of uselessly simplistic, sometimes they can become a bit commercial. But they also can err on the other side and become a little bit too mundane or too granular. And so it's not an easy thing, or at least I struggle with it. And what I want to try and do is not really talk about Juniper, per se. I mean, there's a booth out there, and hopefully it's easy to find. And there's lots of smart people in there that can talk about Juniper products and all that. But I'd like to talk about the future. And to do that, at least when I try and think about it, the easiest way to do it is to start with the past, because history does, as they say, repeat itself, not perfectly, but there are some things we can learn. And then take a look at the economics, because usually the future is shaped by economics. It really doesn't have a whole lot to do with technology unless it's in support of something fairly fundamental that's happening that creates some economic benefit. And then we'll bundle all that up into a plan for our future and what that might look like. So let's get into this and take a look first. And I won't dwell on this because it's really not the purpose of the talk, but I think it'll be interesting. The service provider evolution. And we go back to at least skipping over smoke signals and stuff like that. We'll get to the earliest electronic networks. And we know that we have the telephone. And we watched it morph into a whole lot of different networks over time, and we'll kind of fast forward this piece. And then we've seen over the last decade, plus or minus, we've seen that network attempt to converge. And most people would say it's headed towards an IP destiny. And there's plenty of banners and signs and stuff out there that will talk about how the multi-service converged IP virtual, et cetera, is all going to take place. But the point I want to make about this is not the specifics, and not to do with service providers, but if we look at what they did and how they did it, they looked at the problem and said, we can't have this many networks. And there's a reason why that became necessary and possible. And it became possible because nothing before IP really emerged as being a credible vehicle from a technology point of view. It became necessary because the CapEx was too high to build these multiple separate networks, and operating them was even more expensive. But there's some challenges, and the challenges have to do with the technology and how it works, and is it really ready if we're going to switch off 911 emergency service and make that all IP? Are we really ready to do that? And other things for another day. And then if we are, how do we control all that? Because actually, one of the reasons for having lots of separate networks is you can control them one by one. It's not necessarily a bad thing from a pure control standpoint. Anyway, set that aside for a moment, and let's take a look at the enterprise. Started out on a campus, one set of wires connecting a telephone, another set of wires eventually pulled probably through many of the same risers to plug in the data terminals, and again, the point here not being to dwell on the evolution, but as we've watched that unfold, it's become several different networks out of necessity to support different operations, different applications and services, and eventually to become this global network and networks, plural, spread around the world, again out of necessity. And I will peel the onion here and talk a little bit more about why that's true. This has happened in a much compressed time frame relative to that telephony example. And I would say it's less certain about where it's going. But I would suggest that it also has to converge primarily for the same reasons, because it's possible. And I'm an admitted IP bigot, so I think that's where it's headed. But I'll put an asterisk around that, because I think, and we'll look here, it's not that simple. But it has to happen actually for the same reasons. Because on the balance sheet, enterprises can no better afford to waste and multiply duplicate capital expense or to have multiple different operations than a service provider can. And many of the same challenges around whether or not the technology is ready, or how ready it is or isn't. And then if it is, and if we are going to move to this virtual world, how do we control that? And what is it that this world actually looks like in its evolution? But let's look a little closer at the enterprise, because there's some more problems here. And it's with something that we call the global campus. And the global campus is very different than the local campus, because it is no longer a physical proposition, but it does become critically important for lots of reasons. The global workforce. Clearly, many of us deal with this every day, and probably most of us, in some dimension, deal with the reality of a workforce spread around the world. We deal with teleworkers and the fact that, in fact, I would suggest most of the people in this room telework. Even if we go to the office every day, most of us go home, and the virus of email follows us into our home offices at night and on the weekends and gets in the way of most of the rest of our lives. And when it does that, we're teleworking. And I would also suspect that most of us have been mobile working while we've been here. And so where is the office and how does that really define itself? All of that to say that at the end of the day, we're talking about an extended enterprise model, extended supply chains, workforces, materials, manufacturing, contractors, partners, and all of that happens because it has to. For at least for most of us, I would speak for me, it would be a lot easier to run Juniper in one place. I'd really rather, the old days were a lot of fun. You could walk down the hall and everybody you needed was right there. But if we're going to be globally competitive, and if we're really going to end up with a world that allows us to compete against others who take advantage of the same resources available, we have to be on the global campus. So this problem of the enterprise and the proliferation of networking is not something that we can avoid, and in fact, it's something we have to embrace and take advantage of because our competitors will. So that's a part of the problem. But there's more. Some people call it the perfect storm. And I would add up these elements that would at least be the way I would describe that. And it starts with global competitiveness and all of the things that create the global campus that we know about. But unfortunately, it gets a lot worse. And it gets a lot worse in sort of a cumulative way. One of the things that happens is that the data center consolidation that I think most of us could relate to, while the global workforce and the global campus is being built, the data, or the databases at least, are headed in the opposite direction. We're going from, many people have stories from dozens or hundreds of these down to one or two, actually not one, there's always two, but preferably that would be a nice number to stop at. And so while we're going one way with the workforce, we're going the other way with the data centers and with the databases. And yet, the problem then becomes the legacy applications, because while the data centers are consolidating and the workforce is distributing, applications have to be able to take the data and project it around the world. Now, they were never built to do that. Because when most of these applications were written, the premise was there's a server room in the basement, there's a copper wire that goes up five floors, and there's an IT-approved terminal on the end of that wire, and that's the definition of the network, and that's the responsibility the application has to include the user in the application design. But clearly, with applications having to be responsible for users around the world, the distance is a problem. Hundreds or thousands of different types of devices and browser types that are expected to receive all these online data delivery. All of that constitutes a challenge for this global campus that wasn't in the original design. And then it gets worse because of security. And this talk is not to dwell on security, so I won't do that either, but if I were to do so, I would probably put up the obligatory two or three slides that talk about how, you know, hundreds of attacks have turned into millions and the threats are escalating, and we could all worry about that. We all know that. So this is a huge problem. And then, and this is where the perfect storm hits quite personally to me, you get to the last element of the problem, which is that part where the chief executive signs the financial statement each quarter, saying that, yes, in fact, all of this data and this enterprise on this global campus is exactly as it is reported to you, correct. And so to me, because there's a personal liability in that, the perfect storm is the reality of these applications, these data centers, these legacy problems, the security constraints, meets with the global competitiveness that is required of us in order to take all of this and make sense of it. And then Sarbanes and Oxley, when they got together, or HIPAA, if you were outside of this country with the problem, says, you know, I'd like you to guarantee, beyond any auditable requirement that's ever been made on you in the past, and take personal responsibility that that global campus is more precisely correct than the local one that we started with years ago. That's the perfect storm. So, one diversion here, one digression, just to personalize this a bit more. Let me share with you an email exchange. This is Alan Boehm is our CIO, and I sent him a note, and he sent me this back. And I didn't put all the data on here, but just a bit of a moment on Juniper. We just had our 10-year anniversary about 3 months ago, and we've managed to build an environment. We have about now 4 data centers. We have about 1,500 servers. We operate in 75 different countries. We back up about 400 terabytes of data every month. There's several details beyond that left behind. But the problem is actually at the bottom of the mail. Somehow, for a company that's only 10 years old, that started out with presumably some awareness of some of what was going to happen in this world, we managed to end up with 100 different applications, or more than that, 35 different application vendors, and over 150 integration points. And I asked him for some detail on security, but he said, I don't really want to put it up because it'll just tempt people to compromise it. So we have a lot of security we put in place around all that. But the troubling thing is that even though we did our best, started with a clean sheet of paper, by virtue of other business decisions that were made, acquisitions, rapid growth, many of the things that we've wrestled with as a company, we have ended up with this collage of not only equipment and technology, because that's actually not so problematic, it's the applications and the number of vendors and the amount of interoperability that's required at the application level. So I sent him back an email and I said, thanks a lot for the info. Please deliver these global business processes that I need as soon as possible anyway. Because that's what CEOs are supposed to do. We listen with great empathy and then we say, fix it anyway. Now the fix it part, and the reason that it's important, is because the goal for this is seamless global business processes. I believe that's where it starts. We can't fix a problem until we can identify the high order need that has to be solved. And as we build our business, that's really what it's about. And after that, there's lots of things we need to do. But if it's a global campus, and if it's necessary to be competitive, then what we have to do to make it work is we have to make it seamless. And we have to build a business process once, and it has to work in a useful standard fashion around the world, and it has to be scalable, and it has to do a lot of other things. So, a glimpse as to what we try to do internally.